Generally, I would say that once you hit the Nordics, it's very much the same, even though when we look at it internally, Sweden and Norway is completely different cultures, completely different people. But on the baseline, I think you could get really long of having like similarities in the Nordic countries.
Hi, everyone. This is Seb from Ask Phil, and you're tuned into What's Ecoming. Direct-to-consumer e-commerce is rocketing right now. It's never been easier to start your own business and scale it all around the world. With this podcast, we're inviting founders, CEOs, e-commerce managers, top designers, all kinds of industry experts to give insights on how they see e-commerce developing in the future and give tips that you can use to grow your business today.
Hi and welcome. In this final episode of the second series, we're thrilled to be joined by Stefan Bay Jensen, design technologist at Camille Prince Jewelry. From a home studio in her parents' shed to a professional workshop and a growing e-commerce team, Camille Prince is writing the textbook direct-to-consumer success story. Stefan is here to share the technical details of an e-commerce brand on the rise, with his takes on Shopify editions, finding the balance between digital and physical retail, and how he uses data to drive the business forward.
So, good afternoon, Stefan. Great to have you in the show.
Thank you. Glad that I could join.
Yeah, it's exciting, especially for the people who are listening. They probably don't know that Stefan actually worked at AskPhil during COVID.
That's indeed correct. I did enjoy the 6 months in Amsterdam during COVID, even though that there was not that many people sitting in the street. But I feel like it was a great time to experience Amsterdam, because you can always come back when all the tourists are there, but you will probably never experience the city without tourists ever again.
No, hopefully not.
Hopefully not. No.
And
maybe for the people living there.
Yeah. And maybe for the people in the show today, I'm here alone. Paul's not here today. Paul's enjoying a well-deserved holiday, so we'll do a one-on-one session today. Can you tell me a bit more about your background and your journey until now?
Yes, of course. So I actually started out way back. Maybe not that many years, but 10 years ago, I started doing like YouTube banners, designing YouTube banners, trying to sell them to Call of Duty organizations and stuff like that. Just doing a small hustle on the side of school. And then once we had to figure out which way we wanted to go in life, I just chose to proceed that graphic design and actually did a small education within graphic design. So I did a 4-year education where you do 2 of the years you're in a company working, and then you have the other 2 years on school. From that there on, I worked in some agencies, and then at one particular agency, we worked with a lot of Indian developers. And that's actually how I shifted into developing, was because I saw that we used so much time just on like doing small changes and bug fixes and telling them, okay, let's move this or let's do that. And I thought that why should I use 30 hours a week on telling other people how to do it, if I could just basically try and watch some YouTube videos and then slowly just pivot into doing some HTML, CSS work. And then from there on, I just...
You dove into it.
More in e-commerce, I would say.
Yeah, because for the listener, so at AskPhil, we have a lot of developers working, but I think Stefan, he's the one, how do you say that, breathing Shopify. He even got a Shopify tattoo.
Indeed,
so then you know it's an OG.
Yes, so I also, once I started working with e-commerce, I saw the potential of Shopify, but I also saw that the way that you could build a Shopify theme where you would allow merchants to easily update the site. It wouldn't be like, oh, we need to change this text. How do we do that? Or it wouldn't be, oh, we need to change this image, or we need to rearrange the sections. You would never get those types of calls. You would only get the calls of, building new stuff or helping out with like, okay, how could we come around this problem, or could we test something to pivot more, like to increase the conversion rates, stuff like that. And I thought that was much more interesting, because when working on WordPress, stuff like that back in the day, there wasn't that many of the what you see is what you get editors like we have in Shopify, where it's drag and drop. A lot of the platforms have adapted that now, especially also WordPress. But I just see that in Shopify, you were able to build it completely and say, okay, the customer only have these 10 sections or these 20 sections to choose from. And then, of course, they could manage the site on their own in the end. And it's also easy for people to learn, I think, at least.
Yeah. So you've been working as a partly designer, partly or you learned yourself to develop on especially on Shopify. You know the platform really well. You worked at I think two dedicated Shopify agencies, and then you decided to join the other side, the brand side, Camille Brink. If I pronounce it right.
It's Brink.
Brink, Camille Brink. So a super inspiring brand from Denmark, jewelry brand. Can you tell me a bit more about the brand itself and why you decided to especially choose that brand to work for?
Yeah, definitely. So the brand in itself is a small, personally owned jewelry company. We turned 6 years last year, so the company is 6 years old, and it started with Camille trying to start an education as a jewelry designer. But in Denmark, you often have to then go out to all the boutiques and shops and jewelry and ask, "Oi, can I come and work for you and learn from you as a part of the educational system?" But she was declined on all of the shops. Nobody wanted to have her in, or they'd have the time to teach her how to do jewelry. So instead, she took 4 weeks of night school with her mother, which was like every Wednesday for 2 months. They would go together, and then they would sit and learn how to make basic jewelry. And then from there on, they built a small shed in the backyard of her parents' house. And then she just started creating small pieces for herself and started sharing it on Instagram. And then one thing led to the other thing. And then she could see that, okay, this started to take off. So she had to learn how to build her own shop. So she actually built the first shop we had on Shopify herself.
Oh, that's cool.
Which also is a great, really a great thing to show that Shopify can also be managed by somebody that has no development experience, no design experience, which is just watch a couple of YouTube videos, get into how to build it. So she built the site and then slowly basically scaled 100% the coming years, for some years coming, and then started having the need to put in more people. So in 2019, I was actually put on as the designer and developer from another agency here in Denmark. And that's how I initially came aware of the brand. So we started working together for almost 2 years, where I would be doing the design and development back and forth with the people working at the company. And then, of course, one thing led to the other. When I pivoted and flew down to Amsterdam to join you guys, they were also, of course, a bit sad that we couldn't work together anymore. And then also proposed that if I ever wanted to come back to Denmark, I would always have a spot there. It came around of me starting at Camille Brink.
Ah, nice. So that's quite a thing if they already say like there's a spot for you once you come back. So you really, proved yourself.
I took advantage of that and said, okay, then let's see what this can be, because I can also see a huge improvement of having both internal people, but there's also a huge thing of having an external agency combined. Of course, me working in agencies also gave me the idea of, okay, you need to have people to talk with, or you need to have people to see what is happening in the market, or else you will just stare yourself blind on your own side.
Yeah. Yeah, and what has been the biggest challenge for you in your new role at the company?
I think it's about focus, I would say, because it's we have a lot of things where we do 4 to 6 campaigns a year. So oftentimes, if we do not do a plan properly, we end up just running from one launch to the next launch to the next launch, instead of being sitting down and saying, okay, if we should deliver this properly, we should probably have a couple months to prepare, do a proper plan and stuff like that. But often we just work from day to day and we come up with last minute ideas. And then it's more like, okay, if we just go for the next, if we just stay 8 hours more, then we might be able to launch with this. That's often last minute things, but it's also the ones that keep us on the edge of other companies, is that we have the ability, because we're a young team, to just stay the extra hours just to be like, okay, now we grind it and we make the last 5% that just makes it better.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's fun indeed. Also working in a company of that scale is like you're working so closely with the whole team to achieve the goals together.
Yeah,
I can imagine. And has there already a mistake being made in the last year working there that you think like, I missed it? Or
there's been a lot of mistakes. We always do, but you're tried to challenge the thing that is going on at the current state. But I would say one thing for sure was my first Black Friday within the company as an employee. We had been focusing, we've done everything right. We had been building up a huge hype for our Black Friday. And that's because every single year, Camilla designs a special necklace that we give away for free on Black Friday. So you just have, if you purchase a ring, if you purchase gift card, something like that, you receive that necklace for free. That's the whole point of it, because then it's not just a flat out discount. It's more something that you can come back with, but also every single year you have a different necklace. So you can look back and say, oh, this is from that year, or something happened this year. Everything was going as planned. We were way ahead of time for everything. All the tasks were done in time. And then we were standing there looking at we had a big monitor at the office, and we stood there, we counted down, we saw the numbers going up of the sessions, and we have that everybody who signs up get access to the site 1 hour early. So if you've given us your email consent, SMS consent, messenger consent, stuff like that, you would get access 1 hour early. So people were coming in, we could see the sessions coming, we could see the checkout sessions rising as well. At one point we had 10,000 people in checkout, but there were no orders coming through.
Oh, shit.
So what had happened was that the payment gateway we used couldn't handle that many sessions being put through at once, because we were never afraid of Shopify not being able to handle the traffic, because yeah, I've never seen that happening. So, but then that crashed and we were just there able to do nothing. So
which payment provider were you using, or what's like the local payment method?
We're using a third-party gateway, something called QuickPay that we have in Denmark. It's the most used payment gateway in Denmark. They just hadn't seen the amount of traffic coming in at once, probably with the Shopify integration that they had. So we had to go back and we had to really figure out, okay, how do we get on Shopify payment as quick as possible? And I think within 20 minutes, we were able to Mint Gateway up and running, put the jewelries back on the side, get people to buy. But within that time, we also had to figure out, okay, how do you navigate out of this without hitting a shitstorm? Because once we launched, I think the necklace was sold out within 10 or 20 minutes. So we also had to figure out, okay, how do we prevent a shitstorm from happening? And that can be like really time consuming. But what we ended up doing was also like we laid us flat down and said, this is our fault. It's not your fault. It's not everybody else. This is our fault in the end.
And then you sent a link to QuickPay. You said these suckers
No. Never throw other people under the bus. No. Not in those situations, because they can come and help you in the end. But we managed, and we also had a blast of like Friday that year anyways. So, but I would always say have a backup payment gateway would be probably the smartest thing to do.
Yeah, that sounds like a hectic situation, especially for an important day like that. And then having thousands of people in the checkout who cannot check out while they want. So
I think we managed to have, I think it's 60,000 abandoned checkouts within that hour of people not being able to purchase anything.
Did you also need to adjust your abandoned checkout email change? I can imagine that if you have a situation like this and people then end up receiving like the standardized abandoned checkout mail, then they will get even angrier.
So once we have these like this limited drop, we always disable the abandoned checkout flows on those types of orders, because we know that most likely once they receive the email, the piece would be sold out anyways.
Yeah.
So there's no reason, as you say, as mentioned yourself, there's no reason to send an email to someone if they can't act on it in the end. It would just create more like annoyance at the customer side.
Great. Some good insights, and yeah, I think a cool story to hear for everyone here. So it even happens to the best in class that they have challenges with their platform.
Yes.
Season 2 of What's Ecoming is powered by Shopify, the world's leading e-commerce platform. 2022 is without a doubt Shopify's year, with the launch of Shopify 2.0, Shopify Markets, and Shopify Audiences. These updates are bringing in a new era for e-commerce development. Quite simply, if you want to build an e-commerce platform that's better than the rest, you have to build it on Shopify. For enterprise businesses, check out Shopify Plus, the only cost-effective enterprise platform that's built for change. Ask Phil is a Plus certified partner. Contact us to learn more about how Shopify could be right for your business.
If we look a bit forward to see what's e-coming in the future, I think it's important to ask you also if we look at Shopify. So Shopify launched Shopify Editions almost 2 weeks ago. I'm curious to hear what your take is on that. Let's say if you could name like the top three features they released, where you're excited about and why.
Oh, that's a hard one. Out of 100 features to only select three is difficult. But I would say I'm really, really curious to see the one-page checkout that they're coming with. I'm curious to see how it's implemented, but also if you're going to be able to select that you want it or not have it, like to say, okay, we want this or we want, but also to see how they handle the different conversion rates that there can be, because different markets might have different ways of handling normal checkouts. I knew like before Shopify was a thing in Denmark, a lot of shops were using something called Magento. And they had also their own unique way of doing the checkout. So people had to also get used to how Shopify checkout was back then. But we all know that the Shopify checkout is the best converting like platform checkout out there. So I'm definitely not in doubt that they have managed to create it in a way where it doesn't hurt conversion rate.
Yeah, I heard that regarding the checkout, the old one, the liquid checkout, is going to be depreciated next year, August. So everyone needs to shift. And I spoke to their team. And I think there's a setting in your backend that you can switch to the new checkout one, I think they call it.
Yeah, so you can select that one, but I think it's still the three steps checkout for now, that it's only certain merchants that have gotten the availability of the one page checkout.
Yeah.
Another feature I really like is I like to see is the auto routing. It's not something that we can use. It's basically where if you have multiple shipping locations, so you have, let's say, 20 different warehouses, they might not have the full stock because no company can afford to have full stock on all warehouses. But that you can basically go in and you can say, okay, try to minimize the amount of ships that we have to do in this order. And after that, go in and say, okay, then prioritize the closest one to the merchant to also reduce the shipping time. I think that's really interesting because before that, it has been more, okay, you are able to have different warehouses, but you're not able to route and you're not able to set up rules for which warehouse should ship which products. Because of course, if you have, let's say you have a US-based warehouse, if you have a Europe warehouse, then you might want to sell something that's only available in US and then ship it to Europe. But you also want to do that and have that possible. Because before that, you would probably just disable it and say, okay, it's out of stock in Europe, so you just won't be able to receive it.
Yeah, it sounds like they really took a next step in these type of backend processes as well. To make this sounds quite advanced.
Yeah, and I think it's more like an addition to the whole enterprise system, because what we've seen before is that some of the biggest merchants on Shopify was actually people that grew up on Shopify, that really invested in Shopify early day. But what we can also see now, and I imagine that you can see that on the agency side as well, that more prominent companies are also actually now looking at Shopify to shift over, and especially with the commerce components coming out as well. They're taking like that step in the enterprise direction. And hoping that they still keep touch with the small merchants as well, because that is in the end how it started, but also how many people start.
Yeah, indeed. And then the third one, do you have a third one, a personal favorite?
It's probably the B2B, to see that they are adding more and more features to the B2B, because that's where we as a company right now are heading, is that we're into the wholesale side of our company this year. We closed our first retailer last year and are hoping to add more on this year, because we can see with the times that we're going into, retail wholesale is generally just a good baseline of the company.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear that more often, that you see how can we indeed expand through retail as well next to D2C.
Yeah, but I think it's good for companies that have actually started online, because everything we are thinking online all the time, whereas I think it's a harder task to do for companies that started in retail and then shifted online later. I think we are still lucky that we already have a lot of the infrastructure and a lot of the tech side also talking together.
Yeah, indeed. And if you look like where Shopify has been heading to in the last two editions, like the features they're pushing, how do you think Shopify is going to evolve further in the coming 2-3 years?
It's a difficult one, because with the just in the past year of the Uninstall 2.0 coming out, more flexibility within the platform, meta fuels, so you can have more of this content. I can see that they are focusing more on headless, of course, because that's been a huge player in the last couple of years. But you can also see now that they're trying to address a lot of the problems that headless e-commerce have had in the past, of exceeding hosting costs, different CMSs, stuff like that. You can see that Shopify now invests more in tech. So with the investment in Sanity, with the acquisition of Remix, the JS, those things also shows that now Shopify have taken that step and said, okay, we focus on these players, and then we put our money on that in the end.
Yeah, indeed. The Hydrogen 2 announcement was also quite exciting news.
Definitely.
And how do you feel about their move to being more no code, low code? How do you envision that? Do you think that will proceed further?
I think so. Because what Shopify does instead of many of the other e-commerce platforms is that they're taking that leap into having the no code, low code, but they still open up the, they do not implement it right away. They open up the APIs instead and let merchants build on it because they can see that, okay, if they had to focus, they would opinionate it. Whereas now they more so just open up the platform for extra things so that people can actually pick and choose and say, okay, we only want this part or we want to utilize this, but this is not, this would be bad to build in Liquid, let's say. Then you can just use the APIs to sort of hack around those things. But also with Shopify Flow, that you can now see that Shopify Flow has evolved from being a notification platform where you would tag orders with X tags or something like that. Now you can do some pretty heavy stuff of exporting reports but also just adding products to orders conditionally and stuff like that. And I think that can be, that can shift take a big leap.
So what you're saying is essentially they're also investing in no code, low code applications also for the back end of Shopify to build in extra logic and make the processes how you envision them.
Exactly.
And is there something you would like to see which you can use for Camille Brink? Like a feature you're waiting for?
Headless in the end is going to be something that we're going to do, I would say. I'm excited to see more so the wholesale, see which features they keep on adding because it's also a new product that they have. But we haven't really had the ability to look properly into things. Of course, with the new Markets Pro as well, there's a lot of great features coming in with being taxes and duties automatically being calculated from the Shopify side. All of these like business logic things, I think can be great for us to scale internationally.
Yeah. And then what are the main countries you're looking at currently?
So right now, I would say going into Sweden last year didn't take off as we wanted. We do still sell in Sweden, but I think we're going to focus more on doing like the sort of thing where we go into a country on the wholesale side and then just have a global presence instead. And then once we can see that, okay, the market can be profitable and there's enough customers in the market that a completely localized shop, then we would expand with that.
And if there are people listening who are not active in Denmark yet, can you tell me a bit about how the e-commerce landscape looks like in Denmark? And yeah, to get an idea.
Yeah, so Denmark is, from my perspective, a country where people got really used to shopping online. That has been a thing for many years. So we have seen a lot of brands invest heavily in doing e-com. In Denmark, we are also getting a bit too used to having 1 to 2 day shipping. So once you don't have that, people start to be, oof, do I really have to wait another week or can I buy it somewhere else where it's 1 to 2 day shipping? But generally, I would say that once you hit the Nordics, it's very much the same. Even though when we look at it internally, Sweden and Norway is completely different cultures, completely different people. But on the baseline, I think you could get really long of having like similarities in the Nordic countries.
Yeah, and if someone would want to enter the Nordics, is there a specific country, so not coming from the Nordics, where they should start? Would it be Denmark, Sweden, Norway?
Oof. I would of course say Denmark because that's what we're used to. Of course, there is some complications, especially if you're a European company, then going into Norway can be quite difficult because they're not a European country. Yeah. So even though they're this close to all the other Nordic countries, they are, as not being a part of Europe, they have some complications with more tech that you have to at least figure out before starting to sell up there. But then again, Denmark is the smallest of the three countries, both in population but also in size. But whereas compared to Sweden and Norway, you have a lot of mountains, you have a lot of that, so you can have far between cities.
Yeah.
Whereas in Denmark, there's not that far. You're always close to a pickup shop. You're always close to having home delivery, everything.
Yeah, so probably for the customer service department, Denmark is better because packages won't get lost somewhere in the mountains in northern part of Sweden.
And then I would say Danish people are also used to communicating in English, and people are not scared of shopping in English.
Yeah. Thanks. That's some good insights. And for you and the team, what is the most important topic you're trying to tackle with the team regarding e-commerce?
That should be the wholesale right now.
Yeah.
So we're trying to build a wholesale platform to make use of our needs, but also to see, let's say we wanted to extend with consignment stock, we would have the ability of doing that without losing the touch on where is our stock at or how much stock do we have in different cities. So we're building that, and then this year as well we are looking into rebuilding our current site. So we're not going to do a full redesign. We're just going to have the same design as now, but we completely scrap the tech that we have today and build it up from scratch. And my take on that is because it's a site built back in 2019, and it's just been built on top and on top and on top.
Yeah.
So you quite lose touch with what has happened on the site for the past 2 years. And I think it's a good way for companies to also take a step back and say, okay, do we actually need all of these features? It's a way for us to say, okay, we have all these nice features, but do we actually use them, or do the customers use them? And then if not, why do we have to spend nurturing those features if they're not being used in the end?
Yeah, I think that's a nice take on it, to take a step back and to see like, what do we need and how do we keep it simple,
yeah, and also,
while effective?
Can it be done smarter in the end?
Yeah, yeah, indeed. And so you're mentioning B2B sales as an important project besides potentially rebuilding partly. What's your vision on, let's say, direct to consumer and online retail? Do you also then accept that there will be other online retailers selling the brand?
I think it's still something that we are discussing internally at the moment. I think in Denmark, we won't see any online retailers selling our products, but we are open in looking into that for other countries.
Yeah.
So it's more so that in Denmark, we have the brand now where we want it to be like on our side, but also because we have sort of these unique concepts that we do throughout the year, it would be hard to launch a flash sale limited campaign on another side, but then you would do it on your own side, and then they would probably lose some sales. So I would say for now, it's going to be just us selling direct to consumer in Denmark online, at least,
yep.
And then maybe we would see it in Germany or other countries.
I think that's probably a good idea. You don't want to be battling over the online presence with your own retailers, especially
ahead with Denmark. With the rising acquisition costs and stuff like that.
Yeah. How data driven is your team?
And so we do have some data. It's very in the middle. A lot of people say, oh, we're data driven, and then we just look at one or two numbers. But we try to say, okay, which key points do we need to look at? So it's often like from day to day, we of course have standard points, but like our main KPI, to be fair, is just what is our revenue per session? Like, are we closing new customers? the same amount of revenue per session as we had same period last year, or with the same amount of traffic. I think that's a good pinpoint of seeing, okay, is the business just following, or do we have some other things coming in?
And which tools do you use for that to analyze this data?
Basic Shopify.
Yeah. So basic. The cohort.
Take revenue, you have this amount of sessions, and then you compare to previous year, for example. That's an easy one. And then, of course, if we have to do more data and analysis work, we would do it in Google Sheets, for example.
Yeah. So
pull out the data, and then, but then it's more of saying, okay, we take X period and then we sit in and we analyze that period. Whereas upwards to sales, we are more data driven. So we have built some lead generating forms of, like, we have a whole giveaway system. So for a sale, for example, we would have people create their own wish list on the site. And then they would send that wish list to Camilla to sign up to, let's say, a giveaway, but that could also be to get early access.
Yeah.
With that information, we already know which product people are going to be interested in, because it's, after all, the wish list is the things that they wish.
Yeah.
Then we can analyze with that data, say, okay, is it mainly sterling silver, or are they more looking at gold-plated sterling silver? Which types of products are they looking at? Are they looking at only one collection, or are they shopping across multiple collections? And then we can use that data for when people then enter the site on the pre-release, they already always get like a unique code. And with that code, I know exactly which products they had on that wish list at the time that they put that into the site. So that also gives us some analysis where to also see, okay, how are ads performing and stuff like that, because we can then trace back and say, okay, which ad did this person become a lead from? And then based on that information, we can then see, okay, did they get onto the site before time? And did they end up purchasing? And then you could do the math afterwards and say, okay, did they then end up purchasing what we wanted them to purchase?
And do you use a tool for this process, or is it like you're saying, you're just combining different tools and doing them, let's say, the math yourself?
Yeah, so we just do the different toolings. We use Klaviyo to have some of the data points in it. We also have some SQL databases that store some customer information to say, okay, now we still aren't at the point where we can say, okay, this is where we should look at the data, or this is how we should do XYZ. So right now we just focus on collecting it with the consents. And then once we want to like build that data setup, we then have like a base of data that we can then modify on.
Ah, interesting. Because I think the ideas and the concepts you're mentioning are quite well thought through and advanced. So I like the idea how you request information from the clients, understand what they want with their wish list, and then trying to see how you can seduce them to buy them in the end, but also as an insight.
It's also a good way of seeing like which products are moving, I would say, because you can have, let's say, with jewelry in all, we see that a lot of the purchases, or actually most of the purchases, are gift purchases, for example. Then with that is also a thing of people might want more expensive stuff than they would buy themselves. But also if they're wishing something, it might be just to hit that price point. So that might not be the perfect thing that they want in the end, but it gives an indication of, okay, what do they buy themselves and what do they receive as a gift? And then you can sort of find like the middle spot of, okay, which product is this person more interested in?
Yeah, so that information and that data is also used in the rest in the rest of the company to make decisions on price points and collection.
Exactly.
And is there something, an insight you would like to get from your data, which you currently don't know yet how to get that?
Yes. So for us, it's something like a customer lifetime value and the returning a customer rate. The reason we can't look at these data points right now in Shopify is because we have returns and exchanges come which is something we also hacked together a year or two ago, meaning that we have a lot of orders being exchanges inside of Shopify. So we have orders on being only €5, because then they return the product and a new one is shipped out for free. And that basically skews the whole data part within the Shopify dashboard for us, at least.
Yeah, so you hacked, if I understand you well, you hacked a return solution. But because of that, you don't have a clear insight on customer lifetime value very accurately.
Exactly. Because imagine you buy something and then you want to return or exchange it. Then if you exchange it, you are a returning customer. But if you return it, are you then actually a returning customer? Because you just give it back, but you come and have another checkout session to generate that shipping label.
And how, to get an idea, like what is the return rate on jewelry? Or
I would say we are in a spot around 7% in return rate. And then of course we also have exchanges coming in. Of course we always want people to exchange instead of just return. And that's also why we built that into the whole platform in the first place, is because let's say that people just get the money back and then have to buy it again, then what is the fall of that? Like how many people then end up not buying again?
Yeah.
We know they thought of wanting to buy in the end.
So I'm very curious to hear from you if there's like a D2C brand you really admire and why you admire them.
So I think mainly in Denmark, I would say there is this girls fitness brand called Planet Nusa, which just they from one day to the other basically just came out of nowhere and every influencer was wearing it, everybody within the country. It's like Denmark just woke up one day and then every girl on the planet had a Planet Nusa bag on. They've really done something right, and I really admire how they had been doing all of this influencer collaborations and stuff like that. And they've done it in such a great way that people just buy it without only being collabs.
That's cool. So they're a bit of the kind of the Gymshark of the Nordics, if I hear your story.
Could be, potentially. Maybe in a couple of years, you see them being a big player like the Gymsharks.
Yeah, it looks nice. I like their logo. Maybe two last questions. So one is there like subject matter expert in e-com or maybe on Shopify we should definitely check out or follow?
I would say Mr. Sharma is always a good one to follow. But I generally, when people ask for words that I look for inspiration, but also generally just how D2C e-commerce is expanding, I look a lot of Twitter, because once Twitter is really great at, if you follow someone within D2C, it also comes up with another being like, oh, because you followed this guy, maybe you want to follow these 30 other people.
Yeah.
And if you say yes to that, then out of a sudden your Twitter feed is just
only Shopify.
D2C, and then Shopify.
And then Shopify. And then you end up with a tattoo.
Yeah. But that could end up happening.
Nice. Yeah, that's some good advice. So Nick Sharma, definitely one to check out for the ones who haven't checked him out. If we talk about D2C.
And then Odit as well, I would say. They're really sharp in doing conversion rate optimization. So they do a lot of before and afters, but not just like before and after pictures. They also say, okay, why did we do this? Why would we do that? This is not often always the best way to do stuff, but they always say why they have done it in the end.
Yeah. That's a nice one. That's audit.co, right? O-D-D-I-T.co. Yeah, I like them as well. So then the last question. Imagine that one day you will depart at Camille Lebrenk for any reasons. What would be the thing, and you can decide anything you would like to do. What would be a next adventure?
Oof, it's a difficult one. I still have to see how everything evolves with the whole, do I like internal work or do I like agencies? But I think for now, I would then try to find a similar brand where I can go in and help at a certain point, because I like that. I think right now we have to navigate in a way of, okay, becoming a large company, being a small company. Like that step, I think for me at the time in my life right now is the most exciting thing, of coming into some brand and putting down work and putting down time. But you can also see that every time you do something, you can see the return on the investment, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. So going to a next brand and help them the same way you're doing now.
Yes.
And what if you cannot work in e-commerce anymore?
Well, then I would probably look into some design agencies instead.
So e-commerce for life.
Yeah, I would say that's what I've seen in the past couple of years being the most exciting for me, at least, is the e-commerce space.
Nice. So, Stefan, thanks a lot for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
It was great to catch up and to talk with you about e-commerce and Camille Brenk. Yeah, definitely gonna speak soon. Thanks a lot.
Talk to you.
Thanks for listening to the show. This has been What's E-Coming, brought to you by Ask Phil and Shopify. Don't forget to follow us on socials. We're on Instagram at Ask Phil, and you can find us on LinkedIn as well. Find the links to everything you need in the podcast description. See you next month for another episode of What's E-Coming, and don't forget to subscribe and review.